Hello everybody and welcome to a new episode of the Leaders in Value Chain podcast. I'm your host, Radu Palamariu. Delighted to have with us great human being. Also the first fellow Romanian, so I'm Romanian as some of you may know. Another fellow Romanian, great executive, Angela Crețu. I'm pronouncing it with the English pronunciation, which sounds a bit odd to me, but Angela Crețu is in Romanian. So Angela was for many, many years, more than 25 years with Avon. In her last role, she was actually CEO of the company from 2020 onwards. She has recently taken a non-executive position as on the board of Avon, and it's my great pleasure to welcome her on the podcast and share some great stories today. Angela, pleasure to have you.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Radu. I'm very honored to be part of your community as I'm your keen follower. So for so many years, you are one of the very few professionals out there who truly understand the value of supply chain beyond the administration of a process in a given company. You are a true value creator, and I'm more than happy to be by your side today in this conversation.
No, thank you for the good words. Maybe starting a little bit, Angela, with your career and the question that I like to ask. So, okay, 25 years, you've done roles across different countries, many different countries, actually, in Avon, many different markets. But beyond the CV, there's usually some moments in time when you look back and you're like, okay, this really made a difference. This was one hell of an inflection point. What would those moments be for you?
Looking back, there were quite a few. I mean, for everyone in the audience, because you have such a global, yes, community of followers, they would need to understand that our generation grew up in communism, where you would never miss the principle of equality, yet there is no right of self-expression. So somehow I grew up in this environment. And then once I got to make my choices, professional ones, post my education in economic cybernetics, I understood that the freedom of choice comes as well with the very different behavior. So a new set of learnings and principles that I have to apply. So there were a few inflection moments. One is when I realized that everything that I've done and educated for doesn't have to be the only driver of what am I going to do with my professional life. Yeah. So being a graduate of cyber economics didn't mean that I am with my degree, my diploma work around macroeconomics, you know, it shouldn't define necessarily my job choice. So there were these kind of inflection moments from my education to the choice of the job. I realized that it's also about the experience of what brings us energy on how to share knowledge with the others, but as well learn at a fast pace in an area of an interest that makes you feel really engaged with your life. So I realized that roles in sales, roles by the side of a large group, roles where I would have a tangible sense of impact would be the roles that would make sense for me. And this is how Avon came along. And I was working already in a sales marketing role in a tobacco company, by the way, not much of a purpose there. Yet it was intellectually very stimulating. You know, I would learn a lot. I mean, this industry, because of its restrictions regulatory wise and as well, you know, trying to create a distinct value in the market, it's very intellectually stimulating. Yet when I've seen that announcement coming from the company that called out not only their ambition as any other company in the market, but as well their purpose, I wanted to be part of it. And I will never forget that interview where we are 31 people called it was quite, I would say, unusual to be part in a first instance in a group interview. So they wanted us, you know, to be able to stand out, yes, from the rest of the candidates. And then to the individual interviews, that up to the moment I got the role of a sales manager for Avon, which is in our organization, it's really at a junior level, very really the grassroots of the organization. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That was already for me an inflection moment. Yes. and I have deeply enjoyed every day since. 25 years passed, finished this last year as the CEO of the company, traveled through many countries on almost all continents, worked and lived with women in Middle East, in Russia, in New York, in Central Eastern Europe, in Africa, and had so much of a learning and so much of a experience gathered that I would say right now that I've been truly privileged and blessed to be part of this company.
Mm. And I know that there's a cool story that I read in an interview you gave some time back with your appointment as CEO that you didn't really want it, applied for it, or think about it. Maybe tell that story. I found it fascinating. And also the reasoning why Natura, because Natura bought Avon, right, for everybody. So Natura was the parent company. They made this acquisition at Avon, right? So yeah, share that story, Angela.
I've always been driven by experiences, not necessarily by titles. So to me, with every 3 years in this company, I got a different role, so, and traveled for that role. So every 3 years, I moved my home, my friends, my environment, from business to personal. I was lucky to have a family to support me in all this process. And when Natura & Co. made the acquisition of Avon, I was yet at another milestone when I thought, okay, I'm 20 years in the company. It's time to hand over everything I've done. At that time, I was leading the most profitable cluster for Avon at the international level. And it's time to hand over everything I've done so far and go and experience other types of industries and other type of learning. So I was not at that moment, not even couldn't imagine that I could be the CEO, thinking that now the new owners will for sure look for somebody potentially from Brazil but it was not really a part of my plans. I was not even thinking about that. Like, what would they consider? I knew there were three candidates, all of them top executives with a very good experience, well-respected in the company. As a joke, we would all created a bet house. preferences, because we knew who these three candidates were. I mean, the process was quite transparent and they were going through their own assessments. Therefore, it was really a surprise when the founders called me in Sao Paulo. So we have a conversation. I assumed they would be calling me to ensure that I would be supporting the new CEO. So I thought, okay, they made their selection. It's already 3 months. We are just waiting for the announcement. And they want me to support the new CEO with the knowledge of 2 decades in the company, because that excelling business could be quite specific. And therefore, I was more than happy to support. And we have the conversation. I arrived to Sao Paulo. I went there and visited the Natura's offices, their innovation lab. I understood a little bit more about their culture. And when we had the meeting and I got the proposal, yes, to become the CEO, I was very surprised, very surprised. So I initially was pretty resistant to the idea because, one, it was a surprise. Second, I was not sure at that moment in time, and I was very open about that I will be having all the support and the capital needed for Avon to transform. At that moment in time, Avon was in a need of a dramatic transformation from its business model to its commercial model, operating model, organization. The brand needed a complete overhaul. This was clearly needing the right partners and the right vision for the future. And the flexibility is to look at this end-to-end transformation that was to reshuffle completely the resources. So a high degree of trust was needed in the leader who was supposed to do that. And the partnership through the process, because it implied a capital, yes, transformation of more than $100 million. So that was not a walk in the park. So initially I was quite resistant and I explained as well why. I say, this is the vision. This is where I think the Avon should go through. And I understand it could be a taboo subject for if you want to become an omnichannel company from a traditional direct selling one. And then they came back, I mean, a few days, and they said, look, we are all by your side. You will be having our full support and partnership. The board is by your side. Let's go for it.
Wow. It's it's quite, so it's almost like, but please, Angela, take this job.
not necessarily. No.
I'm exaggerating. but it does touch a point which I think is important, which is, yeah, no, you can't really achieve anything if you don't have support and trust, right? So I think that's crucial. But the second element that I want to dig a little bit deeper, what do you think? And to the part with, you know, you were surprised that it was you that they decide, right? Even if they had three candidates, what do you think put you in that position? I mean, I know the story, but I do want you to share that, because I think there's a valuable lesson in general about building a career in organizations that some of our listeners will benefit from, right? So why did Natura say, okay, even if we have these three executives that are good, that you were already betting on who's going to get it, I think Angela is still the better one. And I know, I mean, is this leave the modesty aside.
I think during the due diligence, they had a task force, the team and the CEO of that time of the group, they went to all our top markets. So they've invested the effort to go and meet the local teams in Philippines, in South Africa, in Poland, yes, in Sao Paulo, in every location in New York at our R&D center. So they went literally on every location where Avon has had a long history and tradition to meet the local teams, to not only introduce themselves, but make sure that they understand the Avon's own history and values and purpose. And part of this due diligence, at least this is what they've told to me, is that a part of this due diligence, as they talk to people about projects, as they talk to people about what they made them proud, or who recruited them, or who promoted them, or, you know, with whom they've worked on a certain initiative or another, my name kept popping up. Because it's true, as I said, I've never been excited about titles, but I was always extremely keen to try on new experiences. And this came in the format and shape of projects. So I was always a me, whenever it came to a digital product or a service model transformation project. Is it with Asia? Is it with Japan? Is it with Africa? I mean, wherever that happened, I wanted to be part of that project, because to me, it was a constant learning, source of learning. And as well, connections. I fed, you know, my energy from all those connections around the world. And hearing my name in all these interactions, they felt, you know, if indeed Avon needs to go through this transformation, people need by their side a leader they can trust. It should be their choice too, not only our choice. What do we know? And that showed a sense of, I would say, of humility from the founders and from the board to really pick not just the leader and people, but as well the strategy that was relevant to Avon at that moment in time, and not something they would necessarily bring just from the Natura side.
Yes. No, I love it. I mean, that's where I was kind of probing to get the story, because I think it's one heck of a situation and of a story, and quite amazing indeed. Also from a mindset of Natura, to make sure that both the strategy is aligned, but also the person driving the strategy is the person that the organization sees or is closest to, or feels that it's the let's say best position at that time, closest from an emotional standpoint as well to drive it. Now, let's talk that transformation for a second, because it's again quite a remarkable one. From I think a lot of us listening, I remember the Avon catalog, right? I was a student. I do remember also being pitched to become an Avon representative at that time, and to today, where Avon is a, you know, omni-channel e-commerce, very digital company, and I think that really took flight and happened in the last 4 years that you were CEO of that transformation. So talk to us a little bit about what enabled that. What were some of the, you know, nuggets of wisdom that you would share to pull off such a tremendous change of culture, model, structures?
Absolutely. I mean, when growing up in the company over the years, you develop that sense of relative performance versus market, relative value versus market. Me going from a market to another, you know, from Turkey to Central Eastern Europe, and together with our teams as well, you know, only when one asks himself the question, like, why would you be a choice and today, and not what has granted your success in the past. Never take that success as granted, but really what makes it you a choice for customers nowadays and what will make them choose you in the future. I think those questions are revealing already, you know, the right insights for you to put together a game plan. And the reality is that as well, the environment has changed a lot. It's where customers are coming requiring not just for the product with its best, with best convenience, yes, best price promotion, but they are looking for distinctive experience. They are looking to instant gratification. They want to be surprised. You know, there has to be a service attached to the product as well to make memorable the overall transaction. And as well, it's about the feeling of contributing to a greater good than just purchasing the product. So they want to, from their suppliers of product and services, to equally be very strong, tangible, visible players for the good of community, for the good of the planet. So I think with all these changes in the customer profile, and you can see it in all demographics, companies, no matter the industry, they have to redefine their business model and the way they manage various stakeholders, not just shareholders. And that requires to manage almost a paradox, because you think it's contradictory, you know, ensuring a better customer experience, yet better return to the shareholder, making sure that your employees are not having just a rewarding experience, but as well a fulfilling one, as well, not just intellectually, but emotional one, while managing the resources in a way that create a sustainable business model. So I think everything requires very careful rebalancing. But for Avon, we've been struggling for decades in having the right speed for a company of 135 years.
Yeah.
It's very easy to just, let yourself complacent to inertia. And it's not because executives haven't tried. I mean, there were multiple teams of executives in trying to figure out how to bring Avon to become a modern choice. But the taboo subject of Avon being accessible outside of just the strict direct selling was a taboo till very recently. And when we got the chance as a team, when I, together with my enabling leadership team, this is how I call them, not executive, because I thought, okay, we have, first of all, to change the position that we have mentally. It's a new mindset. We are enablers of the success of our people, success of our key stakeholders. So when you think as an enabler, it offers you the opportunity to step out of the engine room and see the full perspective of what you try to fix. So we've seen that we need an overhaul of the entire value chain.
Mm-hmm.
So first of all, we needed much more investment, not much more, significantly more investment in brand. But that investment could have happened without a proper curation of portfolio. We're looking at 50,000 active SKUs globally, which is way too much. It's like that bad restaurant with a too long menu, yes, but nothing is actually standing out as a good choice of a food, yes. Then we are looking at and this 50,000, you know, speaking about supply chain complexities, you would have very different portfolios from a market to another. The pickup of the global innovation in any given market was less than 20%. Imagine this, how much churn, how much waste of resource. And then we needed to invest back in technology. The magnitude of that investment would have, you know, stop anyone's heartbeat. Yet those things had to happen. So if we put everything together, there was a massive need of capital. In the same time, there was none available externally. There was not possible to do a new raise of capital out there. So we had to find those money, reshuffle, completely rewire our entire value chain to release this resource to support the brand, the technology investments, the channel as well, to modernize the way we would connect and enable 5 million representatives around the world to create that personalized services to their customers. And then we had a very, I would say, not supply chain with majority of our assets, speaking from manufacturing to distribution centers, working way below their capacity. Then still the way we would operate in terms of estimating the demand was still with very old software, with an army of people trying to figure out the dynamic of certain SKUs and thinking of that portfolio. Imagine how complex it was for us to ensure a proper working capital, and our inventory levels everywhere were really going through the roof. So there was a lot of buried, I would say, resource gold out there, and we really took decisively the action to really leave no stone unturned. So we started with from R&D to say, okay, we're not going to have more than 1,500 new innovation products a year. When you have so much, people cannot even focus. And we have been so proud of their state of art innovation over the years, but because of the amount, we will not be able to focus on those who truly made a difference. So that philosophy of fewer better, we took to the core. And then through this curation of portfolio, so from more than 50,000, we are now down to 5,000, going to 2,000. So we are talking about significant portfolio simplification, unification as well, that came through the unification. Now the entire globe is under one portfolio, one innovation pipeline. And that gave us already released huge resource to manage inventories, to manage demand planning. We brought in AI-powered forecasting embedded everywhere as well. That has significantly released its cost from this heavy, expensive infrastructure that we could immediately reshuffle to support the brand and technology investment. So it was a continuous release, invest, and as well, obviously, improve profitability for shareholders. Then we looked at in order for us to drive these transformations, we also were looking at a portfolio of more than 60 countries, with almost every one of them doing its own brochure, which is a huge, I would say, huge overlap of resources and effort. And step by step, cluster by cluster, we unified that brochure. And that reduced significantly the cost. We manage much better our print, speaking as well about the paper consumption around the world. And it helped us as well to elevate the experience, invest in the customer experience while going for all those who were still wanted to buy from a printed brochure and not digitally. It was a much better experience. So there are lots of elements. At the end, it was not one silver bullet, but lots of elements who contributed to this entire business model transformation. Supply chain came into the game. So I had an exceptional partner. He's still now leading Avon through the next chapter, now adding transformation as well as his responsibility. And Maciej Kaniowski is his name. And with him, we looked at our supply chain footprint, processes, the goal was how to create more of a real time, 24 hours, 48 hours delivery time, yet significantly almost half the cost of supply chain globally. So he went and not only created this improvement in service, we reached record levels in order fill rate for us being our ability to deliver everything that our representatives and our customers would demand, and with a lower inventory, to be able to as well transparently communicate in real time the status of their order, but as well add on a personal experience, to create call centers and experience centers is how we call them.
Yes,
where we would create a recognition element, not just a problem-solving assistance. So really every piece of the service we would offer, we would look to lower its cost through strategic alliances at times if we couldn't do it ourselves with different types of relationships with suppliers, while increasing, differentiating the experience for the key beneficiary. And with this change, we equally understood that our entire organization, we had 11 layers. So from the top of the house in the organization, the CEO, to the shipping line worker, there were 11 layers of command. How would you be able to gain agility? How would you talk about empowerment? How would we actually embed the values we all hanging proudly around all offices with 11 layers of approval? There was no local empowerment. There was no local agility. There was no way local teams could be fit with their own market dynamic, you know, with such a bureaucratic, with such a heavy organizational structure. So we delayered it completely. Now we are down to 5 layers, which is almost looking like a ecosystem instead of ego hierarchical system. Then we could talk about partnership. Then we could talk about, I'm not leading you. We lead together a purpose. We don't lead each other. I'm by your side as a partner. Yes, I do have a responsibility to make sure that your performance and your value contributes as per company needs, but I'm equally responsible to make sure you get same rewarding value back. So I think with that partnership, through this process change, we changed the entire management process, the approval process. We simplified it to an extreme, the approval process, empowering people when they see an opportunity to cut cost, improve experience, to be not only be able to take that decision, but as well be visible for that decision, therefore to see the gratification of that decision. So I think with all these changes, step by step, there were multiple. Then we talk in the commercial area, the investments we've done in the brand. We overhauled completely the position of Avon to be a democratic brand and not an autocratic one. So it's not the one that imposes the standards of beauty, but the one that enhances the beauty in you. And I think with all this positioning, with all this investment, with all these technology enhancements, direct selling at such the traditional was already a modernized social selling channel. But that was not enough because we had to humbly answer to the question, you know, if we are historically the company who followed women wherever they are, why would we be arrogant to say that nowadays they should only buy from a representative? That will always be a gratifying personalized service choice, but they should have the choice to buy us from wherever they are.
Yes.
So this was the inflection point where we decided to become an omnichannel company. And the rest is history. Avon right now has already piloted the model. We have 100 stores in Turkey. We opened a retail strategic alliance with Superdrug in UK. And now we are at the fast pace in countries like Romania, Poland, South Africa, Philippines to be able to fully explore the omnichannel after we have already developed a very rich digital experience.
Wow, that was mind-blowing. I mean, so let me try to summarize a couple of principles. You paid me a compliment that I hope I remember the compliment. That
you're
I
a value creator.
And getting to the gist of the matter. So let me see if I manage to summarize.
Yes.
So on one side, what comes to mind is the principle of stop beating a dead horse, right? Dismount and find a new horse. So whilst I don't think is that exactly the case with Avon, but it's more like enhancement, as you said, right? So if the model is not, you know, if some people would still want to buy from a representative, fine. But if, you know, you have a younger generation that want to buy via TikTok or whatever, fine also, right? I mean, we should not just say this is the only channel. So that's one principle that I think has been an expansion of the model, as well as enhancing basically how can we help people and helping people in more ways. That's number one. Number two, what I heard you say, simplification. I heard you say that a lot. And that also kind of comes to mind that complexity is actually costly. The more complex the model, the more cost it usually takes. And simplicity from 50,000 to now 2,000 is unbelievable. And also you mentioned processes, you mentioned layers in the organization, 11 to 5, amazing. Third thing that
the results are there. The results are there. You're absolutely right. And I like how you brought the essence out of it, indeed. But the results are clear. I mean, we converted more than 15 points of the value chain, converted from dead cost to fuel for growth. And as well doubled the profitability for our shareholders. I mean, that was just what we published so far. The transformation continues. And I think it's key. Yes, it's key. Because nowadays, customers are looking for value for their money. And equally, the quality and experience shouldn't be compromised. So for a leader to be able to respond to this without shrinking the margins, without affecting the sustainability and profitability of the business long term, they really need to rethink everything. And it's not coming just with a simplification, a cost cutting, but it's also coming with a very different way to talk with suppliers, even in supply chain. I mean, we would brainstorm with our key suppliers new ways to enhance service or new ways for us to tap into the innovation to either improve our sustainability or to be able to deliver faster, cut cost, find new ways to create value, new revenue streams coming from supply chain, not just cost administration. Yes. So I think everything is changing currently. Companies are not any longer or cannot afford any longer to be just to have just a vertical focus. That means looking at their own value chain, their own business model, their own resources, and thinking that they can make up the numbers just by cutting costs. That is not going to, you know, sustain that company's relevance for the stakeholders long term, because they will keep being demanded to provide more value. And that comes with innovation. So that comes with the humility to understand that I cannot do everything myself. So as a beauty company, I had the humility to outsource completely the entire technology function in the company. We are having more than 800 IT people, yet it was extremely difficult for a beauty company to attract top-notch talent. We had a few, but very difficult to retain them as well. Moreover, because of decades of depleting investments into the technology, the majority of the work was really like in like those cartoons where you go and keep repairing the same old machine. We would pray for some COBOL programmers, developers, to still be alive. Because some of our platforms, I'm not kidding, were still coded in COBOL. So when you have these situations like that, you have to think about innovation. But then I couldn't bring in just by myself new technology because I wouldn't have the full capital for it. So then I had to find companies who would want to be my strategic allies. So they have skin in the game and we share together the profits.
Yes.
So I found two top-notch technology companies globally, NTT, Infosys. And together, we looked at our entire technology ecosystem from application management to infrastructure management to cybersecurity. I said, okay, let's manage this together and the benefits. Yes, looking for the sharing benefits in the future. And then I'm tapping into current technologies with companies who continue innovate because this is the core what they do.
Yes.
And we had to internally, you can imagine, after 100 years of owning all these functions ourselves, what a mind shift was needed.
Yes.
That we are going to be fine with less than 50 people in IT ourselves, in technology department, just the key people. But then we can trust our partners to take care of our needs.
I want to double click on the supply chain part. I want you to expand a little bit the CEO lens of what, and you mentioned Maciek, a good friend of both of us, that he's a great leader. So what in your mind as a CEO, as a former CEO, what made him in particular, and in general, then we can extrapolate, what makes a good, great supply chain leader?
First of all, I think any leader in this world shouldn't wait for their upline to make them any better or worse. And I think Maciej was not the kind of leader to wait for me to improve in any way his learning or his impact. By all means, I was by his side as a team partner, which meant we transparently reviewed together the status quo of our business. We matched our values. That's very important. I think for a CEO, it's very important to check with his team and supply chain leaders to treat their supply chain leaders as transformation leaders, not just administrators. And I think this is extremely important, the important differentiation. So being a partner, to co-create value. So looking at the future, what's happening with the consumers out there, you need supply leaders who have the curiosity and the drive to understand as well the social movement out there, the preferences of the consumers. This is not the job of marketing. As some supply chain leaders would say, oh, I need R&D and marketing to tell me exactly what needs to be done, and then I'm going ahead and I'm going to, I just need the specs. Yes? And the cost, and that's it, leaving me alone, I know what to do. I think what my relationship with my own supply chain lead, with Maciej, was really focused on co-creation, understanding the full spectrum of this situation, external first and then internal, resources available. Therefore, for us to be able to prioritize time, allocate resources in a way that we don't create bottlenecks as well with other needs in the organization. Because transformation, it was a multi pockets of transformation that were happening concurrently that needed very careful coordination so we don't collapse under the weight of the change. And this is where I think the partnership in between the CEO and it's one of the key functional leaders like supply chain, it's where the success lies in this understanding that together they co-create value. And that value shouldn't come just from the cost. It's also coming from the potentially new revenue streams or revenue acceleration. And with him, we reviewed all that. What's the kind of experience that customers and representatives would get? So we do create, we do amplify the revenue growth. What is the way we could potentially leverage our assets to other key players in the industry and outside of industry? So we do fill in the capacity of the places that we, of the manufacturers, as an example that we have. And as well, being decisive when it was needed to restructure, reorganize, as well shrink operations where there was clarity that there is no high growth potential in the future. I think this is how my relationship with Maciej was. And it's a relationship with no... And maybe I haven't talked about it today. Culture doesn't come just with the process and wiring of the organization. Culture comes with how we connect one with another and how we talk about situations and how we action together. And I think Maciej would say this is a no BS culture. So this is, I mean, his usual approach to things. It's very direct and calling things as they are. But always we talk about situations, not about people, because that is what engages multiple stakeholders on solving something with equal energy and makes people being much more transparent, much more clear about crises that have to be managed or shortcomings or opportunities or anything. And we had that kind of transparent, very direct, extremely direct conversations and partnership, and I've never questioned, by the way, I've never blinked whenever I would, you know, assess the action behind the words and plans we put in together.
Love it. I'm sure Maciek will I'll tell him separately, make sure you listen to this podcast, even if I'm pretty sure that he will, but I'll tell him he owes me, you know, for leading the question like that. Not that we had pre-structured anything, but it came up as a very good compliment to him, which happens to, of course, be true. But yeah, remarkable sharing, Angela. And I'll also, I just want to stress for myself, a key takeaway from this today's conversation, which we're now drawing to an end. What a beautiful way to put it, that it's not an executive team, it's an enabling team. I've never heard that. Well, I didn't quite click this way in my mind before, at least, and I find that to be remarkably powerful. And I'll quote you and I'll use this, and I think a lot more executive teams should really, really think about themselves like that, and it would shift the whole world almost culturally. So a beautiful, beautiful takeaway for me that I wanted to share. And delight, a pleasure, and thanks a lot for your time and for sharing with us today.
Thank you very much. A wonderful conversation. Thank you, Radu, and wish you success in keep, enlightening people and engaging them into conversations that will create better value for us all.
Thank you, Angela.
Thank you for listening to our podcast. If you liked what you heard, be sure to go to www.elcottglobal.com and click the podcast button for all the show notes of the interview. Also, subscribe to our mailing list to get our latest updates first. If you're listening through a streaming platform like iTunes, Spotify, or Stitcher, we would appreciate a kind review. 5-star works best to keep us going and our production team happy. And of course, share it with your friends. I'm most active on LinkedIn, so do feel free to follow me. And if you have any suggestions on what to do and who to invite next, don't hesitate to drop me a note. And if you're looking to hire top executives in supply chain or transform your business, of course, contact us as well to find out how we can help. You.